Morning. Today's Daf Pesachim is Daf Nun. We are going to be concluding today the third parak of the Masechta and beginning the fourth parak. We are finding ourselves on the bottom of Mem Tes Amud Beis. We are at the two dots. We're going to be starting about 7-8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We're starting with the heading of Vechein Mishiyatza. We learned in the Mishnah yesterday on Mem Tes Amud Aleph so that there are two areas in Halacha where you're going to be tethered as a result of two particular halachic phenomena, so you're going to have to come back. That is one example in the Mishnah. Is where you left chametz at home. You left your house on Erev Pesach, and for a good reason. The Mishnah gives a number of good reasons why you left your house. You're en route to doing a mitzvah, but in the meanwhile, however, you remember that you left chametz in your house, so you have to go back home in order to get rid of the chametz. So there are a couple of variables. One variable the Mishnah describes is how far away did you go. The other variable is how much chametz do you have in your house. So for that second variable, it's subject to a machlokas. You remember at the end of the Mishnah yesterday, so there were a number of shitas in terms of how much chametz did you leave in your house. Reb Meir says zeb zeb chabetza, that we're talking about the shear of a kabetza, and Reb Yehuda says talking about a shear of a kezias. And then there is a third shita over there, the shita of the chachamim, which we're going to come back to. Meanwhile, so those are your two options. Another area halacha where you're also going to be tethered is the following: you went to Yerushalayim, you ate basar kodesh in Yerushalayim, and you left Yerushalayim and you didn't finish your basar kodesh. In fact, you had some of it with you. As you're leaving Yerushalayim, you go into your pockets, and awkwardly, you discover some of the basar kodesh with you as you leave Yerushalayim. Now, when you leave Yerushalayim, that basar kodesh now becomes pasul. It has a pasul of what's called yotzei. So you have to destroy it. The destruction of it has to be done in the Beis HaMikdash. A detailed discussion, which I didn't mention yesterday, and I'm only going to briefly mention today, is when we're talking about the basar kodesh. Are we talking about the basar kodesh of a carbon ola? We're talking about the basar kodesh of shlamim. Okay, and Tosfos, you can go back to yesterday's daf, and Tosfos discusses it with some detail. But let's just right now, just to keep it simple. So you have the basar kodesh, and you need to go back, and you need to burn Yerushalayim lifnei habira. You go to the area of the Beis HaMikdash in order to burn it, and again, now it's going to tether you. Because now you have the basar kodesh, you have to return. So again, the variables are, how far out are you? Are you beyond Sofim, or are you still within Sofim? Rashi describes it as a town. Tosfos doesn't agree, but anyway. So it's one variable is how far away you are, and the second variable is, how much basar kodesh do you have in your possession? And again, machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rameir in the Mishnah, in terms of how much basar kodesh are we talking about. Rameir says, this year is going to be that of a kabetza, and Rabbi Yehuda says this year is going to be that of a kezias. Good. So that is the mission that we saw yesterday in these two areas in halacha, totally disparate areas, but two areas in halacha where you are going to be tethered, either because you have to go back in order to burn the chametz on Erev Pesach, or because you have basar kodesh and you have to go back to the Beis HaMikdash, lifnei habira, in order to burn the basar kodesh. With that stated, we're now going to pick it up where we left off yesterday. We're going to try to gain an understanding of this machlokas between Reb Meir and Rav Yehuda regarding shiurim. V'chein mishiyatza v'chula lememra. So we pick it up now in the Gemara. So lememra, so you mean to tell me now the Reb Meir of a kebetza who the chashiv. So according to Reb Meir, it seems like the shir chashiv is going to be the shir of a kebetza. And Rav Yehuda of a kezayis nami chashiv. And Rav Yehuda is telling me that the shir of a kezayis is going to be chashiv. The remainder of the Gemara says, okay, but here's the problem, and that is the seventh parak of brachos. A parak dedicated to the mitzvah of benching. So there, how much do you have to eat in order to bench? Okay, good question. First question that is dealt with in the Mishnah, first Mishnah of Brachos. So, Ad Kamehim Azamnim, Ad Kezayis, Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Ad Kebetza. So you have the Shitas of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. We're assuming over there that the Tanakhama of that Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says a Kezayis, and Rabbi Yehuda says a Kebetza. So it's the exact opposite of what we're saying over here. So over here, the steer is really simple. Sounds like that when in terms of eating, the amount of bread that you have to eat in order to bench, so it sounds like for Rabbi Meir, the shir chashev is a kezias, and according for Rabbi Yehuda, the shir chashev is a kebetza, and it's the exact opposite of what we're saying over here. So I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mukhlefet Hashita, so the first approach of the Gemara, which is Rabbi Yochanan Shita, which I don't have a survey of how many times it happens, but generally speaking, when you have stira, so Rabbi Yochanan is the one who is fine with just simply switching around the shitas, so that now everybody aligns. It's not clear in our Gemara right now which positions he's ready to switch. meaning we're going to have to flip either the positions over here or the positions over there in brachos. Whichever way we're going to go, muchlefes hashita, we're going to flip it around so that now they will be a match. That is one approach. Abai amar la'olam lo tepach, and Abai says, no, don't do that. Don't flip anything around. Keep everything as it is. Hasam b'kray pligi hacha b'svar pligi. So the Gemara says, as far as the discrepancy is concerned, they are different issues and they are predicated on different sourcing. So hasam b'kray pligi. So as far as over there by brachos, when do you have to bench? So they're arguing in terms of pshat and the psukim. Rebbe Meir savar v'achalta zu achila v'savata zu shtia v'achila b'chazayis. So as far as Rebbe Meir is concerned, the pasuk says when it comes to the mitzvah of benching, v'achalta v'savata uveirachta. So he's going to break it up that achila is a reference to the actual eating, savata is a reference to the drinking. We know that achila comes with a chazayis. So in other words, what we're able to do with the drasha is isolate the word v'achalta to just the act of eating, which is going to be a shir of a chazayis. And Rav Yehuda Savar v'achalta v'savata achila sheish ba sviya ve'izuzu ke'bechabetza. And as far as Shitas Rav Yehuda is concerned, so no, the words v'achalta v'savata are not to be divided, but rather the v'savata is modifying the achila. Generally, achila by itself is a kezayis, but over here when the Torah says v'achalta v'savata, so that means to say that it has to be the kind of achila that results in sviya. So a kezayis is not going to fill you up. A kezayis is like about 40 grams. So that's not going to fill you up. It's got to be the kind of eating that's going to fill you up. That's the achila kedei sevia, which is a kavetza. So the Gemara says, so that's the machlokas between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda vis-a-vis when a person has to bench. Good. So they're arguing about how to darshan a pasuk. But a pasuk specific to benching. Hacha b'svara pligi. Over here, we're arguing about a svara. The Rav Meir savar chazaraso ketumaso. Matumaso b'chavetza av chazaraso b'chavetza. So, and Rav Meir will tell you, look, as far as the requirement of chazar is concerned, what is going to be the determinant in terms of what's going to have to force you to come back. And so, as far as Rav Meir is concerned, so we're going to base it on the shear of tumma. We know when it comes to ochlin, so a food is going to become tummy when. So, as we've gone over numerous times, every time this issue of tumas ochlin comes up, we remind each other that in order to be mekabel tuma, so Rashi says that the food could be any shear, in order to transmit tuma from the food to another source, another either ochel or mashke, so there it's going to have to be the size of a kabetza. Okay, that's Rashi. And Tosos Racha says no, that both in terms of receiving tuma and transmitting tuma, the shear is a kabetza. Either way, what comes out is that when it comes to Tumas Ochlin, the shear is a kabetza. So our mayor says, okay, that's also going to be the shear of Chazar as well. Meaning this idea of Chazar, Rashi says it over here very clearly. The idea of Chazar is a chumar medrabanan. The rabbis impose you have to return. So what is going to be the threshold in which the Chachamim said, now you have to return? So our mayor says that the threshold is going to be predicated on Tumas Ochlin. Since the shear of Tumas Ochlin is a kabetza, so your requirement to return is going to be a kabetza. Rav Yehuda savar chazaraso ki isuro. And Rav Yehuda is going to say no. As far as what's going to be the threshold is going to be isur. Ma isuro b'chazayis av chazaraso b'chazayis. Just like the threshold is going to be the shear of a chazayis. So too, the shear of chazara, which again is imposed by the chachamim. But what are they modeling themselves after? They're modeling themselves after the shear of isur. Therefore, for a chazayis, you have to come back. That is now the machlokus over here. So what Abai basically is arguing is that keep everything as our nusach indicates. And in terms of the benching, keep both of those positions the same. The Remeir over there by benching says a kezayis. Rav Yehuda says a kabetza. Over here it's going to be flipped. But Abai will tell you that in terms of what's guiding these halachas, it's going to be two different sourcing. For benching, it's going to be psukim and how to darshan the psukim. And for chazara, what we're discussing over here in psachim, it's going to be based on svaras. Different psukim, different drashas, different svaras. Good. We are now Nun Amud Aleph, and we are concluding over here the third parak of the Masechta. A lot of agadata bringing us from here until the end of the parak. Tanya. We're going to start with the following. Bryce, Rabbi Nassan, Amr, Zev, Zev. Sorry, not yet. One more point on this chazara, and then we start with the agadata. Tanya, Rabbi Nassan, Amr, Zev, Zev, Kishtei, Beitzim, V'lahod, Lo, Chachamim. Rabbi Nassan's of the position that the shear of chazara is going to be Kishnei, Beitzim. It's going to be the volume of two eggs, and the Chachamim don't agree. Okay? The Gemara doesn't discuss the shir, the shita of Rabbi Nathan with any kind of detail. Where does it come from? Unclear. How does he get to two eggs? Unclear. Okay, now we continue. Vayaba yamahu, the pasuk in Zechariah. Vayaba yamahu lo yeah, or yikros v'kipaon. So it will be on that day. Obviously, Zechariah over here is forecasting by yamahu that day, which is a reference to Yemos HaMashiach, and it's going to be on that day that there won't be or yikros v'kipaon. It could be Yemos HaMashiach. It could be a period of Olam Haba. Right there. There's a lot to navigate in terms of understanding future days, but anyway. But as far as the Agamar is concerned over here, it's going to be focusing on a couple of psukim. Actually, three psukim found in Zechariah describing it. What does that have anything to do with our discussion over here? So it is loosely connected, and the connection we're going to get to in just a little bit. But either way, so the pasuk says that we'll be on that day where the loya or yikaros, v'kipaon. So my yikaros v'kipaon. So what does that mean? So Rashi over here points out that what we're going to be doing is the following. The word yakar means heavy or substantial. The word kipaon, says Rashi, is davar kal, something which is light and not substantial. And so basically what we're saying is that something that we think is substantial in this world, we're gonna get to end of days, and we're gonna come to the discovery that it's not that substantial. So, and a couple of explanations of what that's referring to. So, Amar Rabbi Elazar Ze'or, Shia Karba Lama Zeve Kafu Lama Ba. So, it happens to be the light of the sun. So, the light of the sun in this world seems really substantial, right? You look up, you try to take a look at the sun, and it's very hard to see. And meanwhile, when it comes to the Olam Haba, we're going to see that that light is nothing compared to the or, right? The Rashi brings down the beginning of Chumash, that the ore that was built that was created on day one, so Kadosh Baruch Hu put in Geniza and is going to take it out in the future. Okay, so that is so our sun is going to be relatively nothing compared to the ore Haganos. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, we're continuing the Gemara now. This is going to be a second shot in that pasuk in Zechariah. Elo Nagan Ba'olo Sheikar Mehem Ba'olam Azeh V'Kafuyim Heim La'Olam Haba. Couple of mesechtas and shas. In the Daf Yomi, we don't see these mesechtas. Mesechtas of Negayim and Olos. So their topics are heavy topics. They're hard. They're hard to learn. And even though they seem difficult in this world, they're going to be light in Olam Haba. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar Elu ben Adam Sheikar Mehem Olam Azev V'Kfuim Heim L'Olam Haba. And the third explanation of this pasuk in Zechariah, given by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, is that it's referring to people who seem like they are significant in this world, and meanwhile, they're light in the next world. Ki hadu Rav Yosef bereder Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Gemara tells the story of Rav Yosef, son of Rav Yeshua ben Levi. Chalosh v'isnaged. So he got really sick. And isnaged, Rashi says he died. Right? For a moment, his neshama left his soul. That's the way Rashi describes it over here. Ki hadu amar. Now he comes back. So he had a vision from the beyond. So he said, Amar Le Avu Amai Chazeh. So the father said, Rabbi Shuma Levi said to his son, what did you see? Amar Le, Olam Halfach Reisi. So he says, I saw a world that was totally inverted. El Yonim Lamata. V'tachtonim Lamala. So I saw people up in the El Yonim, who in this world are El Yonim. They're the people who are up top in this world. And meanwhile, in the other world that I saw, they were Lamata. And just the opposite. I saw the people who were in this world, who were low and disparaged. In the other world, they are lamala. So amalo bini olam baru reisa. So Rav Yeshua ben Levi says to his son, no, you didn't see a confused world. You saw the world in its honesty. Va'anan hechi asam. And now Rav Yeshua ben Levi asks his son a really strange question. Where do we stand over there? Meaning, where do we talmid chachamim stand over there? Now, it could be that the question is predicated on the fact that maybe for certain talmid chachamim, not only are they involved in spiritual matters, but they also are afforded a certain amount of kavod. And so therefore, he wonders now, if you're receiving kavod in this world, this is how I surmise the question to be. If you're receiving kavod in this world, does that take anything away? Does that diminish in the other world? Meaning, if everything gets inverted and people who are receiving kavod in this world are going to be not receiving kavod in the next, so is that the same thing going to be true for Talmid Chachamim? That's how I imagine the give and take is over here. That's the question. The answer. So back to the Gemara, ki hechi eisi anan hacha hachi eisin and hasam. So what Rabbi Shimon Levi's son said, in that regard, it doesn't change. The Talmud Chacham in this world is going to be in the same position that he is in Lasid Lavo. He will be in a position of Elyonim. V'shamati shayomrim, I also heard the following. Asher mishabalakan v'samudo biyadom. Fortunate somebody who comes here and has his Talmud at hand. Simple pshat of the Gemara is that he remembers a lot of that which he learned. But it could also be a reference to the notes that he takes as well. Okay, various ways to understand it, but obviously somebody who has spent his time endeavoring, learning, and mastering of Talmud Torah, so such an individual will be very fortunate in La'asid Lavo. V'shamati shayomim, haruge machos ein adam yachol la'amod b'mechitza sam. I also heard that those people who were killed for haruge machos, those people that sacrificed their lives because of a gzeres machos, because of some sort of governmental decree that went against the Jewish people, and even though the right thing to do is to give up your life, but it's difficult, it's a hard ask. So he says another thing I heard is that they have a position, a place in Olam Haba that no one else is going to share. So the Gemara wants to know, man nin hu? Give me an example of who we're describing over here. Elim Rabbi Kiva v'chaveiro, mishum haruge malchus v'sulo. Now we can't be talking about Rabbi Kiva. Now it's true Rabbi Kiva did give up his life for gzeres malchus. That part's true. The Gemara at the end of brachos. However, Rabbi Kiva was an outstanding Talmud Chacham. He was he was responsible for the Mesorah. Right? We wouldn't have the Torah the way we have it nowadays without Rabbi Kiva. So it can't be that Rabbi Kiva's position in Olam Haba is just going to be a function of him having given up his life for Haruge Malchus. Rabbi Kiva is much more than that. So the Gemara says, Ella Haruge Lut. So the Gemara says, you're right. So there's another episode involving two brothers, the Gemara in Tanis, Daf Yud Ches. When we get to the Gemara over there, we'll discuss in more detail. Anyway, there are episodes that we know about historically. The Gemara here points to one particular scenario, but it's just an example where people do give up their lives. They themselves are not Talmidei Chachamim. They're not that learned, but they give up their lives and they afford for themselves a special place in Olam Haba where others cannot stand. Okay, that is all but one pasuk in Zechariah in the 14th parak. So right now we haven't yet arrived at the connection, but we are right now learning the 14th parak of Zechariah, at least just a number of pasukim in that. So we dealt already with the pasuk of Ayaba Yamahulia or Yikaros Vekipaon. Now we continue in that parak in Zechariah. Bayomahuya Mitsalos Hasus Kodesh Lashem. Okay, so another pasuk over there that describes something to do with horses, Kodesh Lashem. Really unclear what's going on in that pasuk, and the Gemara over here now is going to give three different explanations of what the pasuk is describing. My Matzlos Hasus. So I'm Rav Yeshua Ben Levi Asa Kodesh Baruch Lo Sifay Yishleim Ad Shasus Rats Umatzil. So Rav Yeshua Ben Levi says that that pasuk over there is forecasting the expansion of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim will be expanded and next to the point where it's going to be so large, this is the way Rashi describes it over here, is that you're going to have the horse running a full half day. Now, geographically, from a linear standpoint, I don't know how far that is, but it's suffice to say that it's really far. And yet, that will be the next version of what Yerushalayim will be. So that is one understanding of this pasuk in Zechariah. And this, by the way, is a connection to our discussion over here, right? Because we've been discussing what happens when you have Basar Kodesh and you leave Yerushalayim. So, okay, it's not a very tight connection. It's a loose connection. But nevertheless, we're talking here about the annexation of Yerushalayim. And one day it's going to be really, really geographically large. That is one way to understand this pasuk in Zechariah. But the Gemara gives us two other ways to understand it. Rabbi Elazar Amar, Kol Mitzilo Shetolan Sus Bein Enav, Yeh Kodesh Lashem. Rav Elazar says that there's a number of adornments and jewelry that are put around the horse, and that eventually what's going to end up happening is that will be collected and used as helping funding the Beis Hamikdash. And Rav Yochanan Amar Kol Biza Shabozin Yisrael Ad Sha Shasus Ratz Umatzil Yeh Kodesh Lashem. And Rav Yochanan gives a very similar pshat in that we're going to go to war, we're going to defeat many armies, and we're going to have the Biza, we're going to have the spoils. And for these spoils, they're going to be used Kodesh Lashem again, funding the Beis Hamikdash. So Bishlam Lamanda Makobi Zishabaz Yisrael Hainu Dichziv Vayasi Ros Beves Hashem Kim Mizrakim lifnei hamizbeach. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. This pshat that we're talking about, how the Beis HaMikdash is going to be funded, right? That's pshat number two. Pshat number three. So you certainly understand that there's another pasuk right there in the 14th parak of Zechariah that describes how all the bowls in the Beis HaMikdash are going to be made up of silver, meaning that the Beis HaMikdash is going to have what seems to be endless resources. So then you understand. So the Gemara says, but if you're dealing with these other pshatim, has to do with the annexation of Yerushalayim, has to do with the dormant that was worn by the horses. So what do you do with this pasuk? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what you do with the pasuk. Milsachrisi kamar dimit atre Yisrael umisnat ve'emaisei. Okay, so the two pesukim have nothing to do with one another. On one point, the Gemara was making is that Yerushalayim will be annexed and larger, and then the next pasuk in Zechariah just simply talks about the general wealth of the Jewish people and how they're all going to be moved to donate to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Beis HaMikdash is going to have a lot of money. So and the two points are not necessarily connected, and fine, it's fine. The Bishlam Lamandam Rebiza Ha'ainu Dichsiv Lo Yekanani Od Beveis Hashem Tzvakos. Now, if you're going to go with this third shot, that we were successful in many war campaigns, and we're going to come back with a lot of spoils, so then I go back to the Pesukim of Zechariah, and it makes a lot of sense. The Pesuk says that there's not going to be Kanani Od Beveis Hashem Tzvakos. There are not going to be any more merchants over there. We're not going to need any more merchants, meaning that Yerushalayim will be independently wealthy. So Elamand Amar Nechtarti Mai V'lo Yeh Kanani. However, if you're going to go with these first two pshatim, so again, what does this have to do with anything about a Kanani, a merchant, being in Yerushalayim? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the way we're Amar Rabbi Yirmiya, Ein Kanani. So no, we'll just simply say the Kanani over here just simply means that there won't be any poor people in Yerushalayim, Allah Zilavo. Now, originally we understood the Kanani to be a merchant. How do we know that Kanani is to be understood in that pasuk in Zechariah as a reference to the merchant? Meaning, what we could have said pshat was, which the Gemara never entertained, is that Kanani is a reference to somebody who is from the nationality of Canaan. That could be, but the Gemara says that we know not to even entertain such an idea. And the Kanani, various places in Chumash, just simply refers to a merchant. So that was true in Zechariah. The Gemara wants to know, where do we see that? How do we know that? Ukanani, that's the Gemara's question. Ukanani milan de ikre tagar. How do I know that a Kanani could also just be a simple way to describe a merchant? So dichsiv, the Gemara says, I'll tell you how, because it says, Vayirisham Yehuda bas ish Kanani. So Yehuda, right after the sale of Yosef, the very next parak, the beginning of the very next parak, Lamed Ches, so it talks about how Yehuda finds a wife. So he marries the daughter of ish Kanani. So my Kanani. So they're in that pasuk. So what could it be referencing? So the Gemara says it is absolutely out of the discussion. It's out of the question that he married the daughter of an actual Canaanite. So Ilay Mekanani Mamash Efsheba Avram V'Yizrus Yitzchak V'Yitzchak V'Yizrus Yaakov V'Yehuda Azam V'Nasif. So look, let's just go through a simple family history over here. When Avram says to Eliezer, "I want you to find a wife for my son," so rule number one, not a Kanani. And when Yitzchak says to Yaakov, "Here you're going to go find a wife," and Yaakov himself is going to go out to find his wife. So Yitzchak says to Yaakov, here's the rules. It's very simple. Not a Kanani. And you now mean to tell me that Yehuda goes out of his way in order to find a Kanani to marry for himself? So the Gemara says impossible. Simply impossible. So the Elam Rabbi Shimon Malakish Basgavra Tagra. And so it must be that the word Kanani over there is not somebody, it's not a description of his nationality, but it's just simply an adjective describing somebody who's a merchant. So Dichsiv, and he says, and I'll tell you. So here we go back to the Navi. We go to Hoshea over here. So Kanan biyado mazne mirma. Okay, so we have a pasuk describing the merchant being called a Kanani. Happens to be in that pasuk we're not describing him as an honest merchant, but still the word Kanan is a reference to the merchant. Ibai Sem, another possibility is me'acha asher sochreha sarim kenaneha nechbedei aretz. Okay, another pasuk. The second pasuk is from Yishayahu. First one's from Moshe, second one's from Yishayahu. Again, we have a couple of psukim in Tanakh that describe the Kanani not as a nationality, but just simply as a description as a merchant. And we're going to say the same thing over here, that we're certainly saying the same thing by Yehuda, that he, when he married the Bas Kanan, she was simply the daughter of a merchant, not an actual Kanani. And then when going back to that pasuk in Hosea, so there we also assume that Velo Yeh Kanani Ol Beves Hashem Tzvakos is a reference to a merchant. Okay. We are just one more pasuk in this pasuk in Zechariah. Again, for most of the first half of today's daf. So we're finishing up here the third parak of Pesachim, and we're spending time with the Psukim in Navi in the 14th parak of Zechariah. The first pasuk we dealt with, Vayaba Yamahu, Lo Yeh Or Yikaros V'Kipaon. We offered three different ways to understand that pasuk. We went through the second pasuk over there in the 14th parak, Vayamahu Yeh Al Matzalos Sasus Kodesh LaHashem, offered three interpretations of that pasuk. And now one more pasuk here in the 14th parak of Zechariah. Okay, that pasuk, I would say that more of us have familiarity with that pasuk. Anyway, the pasuk is very difficult, and the pasuk says that the Hakadosh Baruch Hu will be by Yomahu on that day, Hashem Echad Ushma Ochad. It'll be one Hashem and Ushma Ochad with one name. So, Atu Aidna La Vechadhu, the obvious question: what is the pasuk in Zechariah making reference to? That's on that day, Hakadosh Baruch Hu is going to be Hashem Echad. Impossible. Impossible to understand that pasuk. So Am Rabbi Acha Bar Chanina Lo Ka'olam Azeh Ha'olam Haba. So what we are describing over here is that there's going to be a qualitative difference between Olam Azeh and Olam Haba. So Olam Azeh Abasuras Tovas Amar Berucha Tovam Etiv Abasuras Raus Amar Berucha Ne'emes. So in this world, when we hear good news, we say Tovam Etiv. When we learn about bad news, so we say dynamis. That is as per the final parak of brachos, right? Earlier this morning we talked about the seventh parak of brachos, and now we're referencing over here the ninth parak of brachos. So anyway, so we know that all is good. Now everything coming from Hashem is good, but still, as we perceive the world, so for the good we say tov emetiv, and for the unpleasant news we say dynamis. So la olam haba kulo atov ameitiv, but in olam haba, it's going to be atov ameitiv, meaning that we're going to be able to perceive the world in such a way that we can see how everything is atov ameitiv. Over here in the world that we live in the limited understanding of the world that we live in, so in our limited understanding, so it's hard for us to see, and that even is represented through the brachas that we make. So for the perceived good, it's atov ameitiv. For the perceived bad, it's dynamis. But in the Yasid Lavo, in the world to come, it's all going to be perceived as our understanding is going to expand, so that we have a full appreciation of the world around us, and we see everything being atov ameitiv. Good. So that is one way to understand it. Ushmo echad, and then also the pasuk in Zechariah says that vayaba yamahu yeh Hashem echad. So we just explained what that means, meaning it's all going to be one bracha. Ushmo echad, what does that mean? So Gemara now goes on to explain. So my echad atu aydin alav shmo echad hu, meaning what does that mean, shmo echad? Isn't it Kadosh Baruch Hu only have one name even before we get to Asid Lavo? So Amar of Nachmar Yitzchak lo kolam azeh ha'olam haba. Ha'olam azeh nichtav yodeh v'nikra balav dalin. So here in this world, while we're here, so we don't pronounce the name of Kadosh Baruch Hu as it's written. It's written yud kei vav kei, but we don't pronounce it in the way that's written, but rather we say b'shem adnos. But meanwhile, when we get to Asid Lavo, so the Shem Yud Kei, we're going to pronounce the Shem Yud Kei. So Sava Rav Lemedrusha Bepirka. Now Rava thought that, look, I understand that we don't pronounce the name the way it's written in this world, but he thought that maybe it'd be appropriate of teaching. I'm not sure what he's going to teach about it, but obviously because it's not within my pay grade to understand. Rashi over here just simply says, what was he planning on teaching? So Kriya de Yud Kei de Arba Osios Darshe Vitame Atluyimbo. Okay, the certain ideas that are attached, associated to it. Anyway, he wanted to teach it, but in the teaching, he also wanted to pronounce it in the way that it's going to be pronounced, meaning letter for letter. So Amrle Ahusab Olam Ksiv. Sorry, La Alem Ksiv. So an elderly said to him, in other words, somebody tapped him on the shoulder. We can always speculate who the somebody is, but somebody went over to him, an elderly went over to him and said, no, 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 don't do that. So the Pasuk says, now, as we're going to see in just a moment, the Pasuk says, Zeshmi la'olam. But it says la'olam without a vav. It's written chaser, which means that it could be understood as aleim, meaning we have to hide, we have to conceal. There are certain elements of Shem Hashem that are to be concealed. So, and that's what the Saba, that's what the elderly says to says to Rava who wanted to darshan the pasuk. So he says, La'aleim ksiv, Rabbi Avina Rami ksiv, Zeshmi la'olam, Zezichri l'dor v'dor. So Amar Kosh Baruch Hu, lo kishani nechtav ani nikra. The way it's written is not the way it's going to be pronounced. Nechtav ani b'yudkei. It's written with the letters yudkei vavkei. V'nikra ani b'alavda. But meanwhile, the way it's pronounced is going to be b'shem Adnos. And only la'asid lava are going to have the ability and the understanding and the capacity to pronounce it with the yudkei vavkei. Hadron alach elu ovrim. And so ends now the third perek of the Mesechta. We have the schos now starting the fourth parak of the Masechta. And just by way of introduction, up until this point in time, we are now in Daf Nun 50, blot into the Masechta. Our topic of discussion has basically been Chametz and Matzah. Right? A couple of diversions and a couple of distractions, but mostly it's been Chametz and Matzah. How to make sure that you make Matzah correctly, how to ensure that we have no chshash of chametz, the yisurim that are associated with chametz on Pesach, ba'yimatzei, the yisur of achila, the yisur of hana'a, the ownership kares, when it's there, when it's not there, the lower levels of chametz, the inferior categories of chametz, chametz betar, rovitz, chametz nuksha, okay, etc., etc. So we've been dealing with, since the beginning of the Masechta, topics of chametz and matzah, and when we start with Perek 5, the fifth Perek of the Masechta, that's the next Perek, which begins about a week from now, right? It starts on Daf Nun Ches, we're on Daf Nun, so a little over a week from now. So we're going to be starting the fifth Perek, and that starts with the Karban Pesach. So all the details of Karban Pesach are going to be discussed in Perekim 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. Truth of the matter is 9 really deals with the Pesach Sheni, but anyway, but Karban Pesach. So, and then the 10th parak deals with the Seder. So where do we stand right now? So the first three parakim dealt with Chametz and Matzah. Parakims 5 through 9 deal with Karban Pesach. The 10th parak deals with the Seder. So what are we going to be doing here in the 4th parak? So the 4th parak, really interesting parak here in our Masechta. It's going to deal with Minhagim. Right? There are customs that have made its way into the Jewish people. And so what do we... The source of these Minhagim are going to not so much be discussed, but once you have a minhag Yisrael, so not everybody's going to be operating with the same minhagim. Okay, you can take a look around now. You see Ashkenazim, Sephardim, Chasidim, so we have varying minhagim. So what happens when you go from one community to another community? What should you do with these minhagim, which are not going to be universal? Okay, right, obviously, when it comes to mitzvah Yisurim, so that is the standard. That's going to be universal. But when it comes to minhagim, so various minhagim, which are going to be mostly geographically based. So what do we say regarding the people who travel, go from one place to another? So how should they conduct themselves in terms of minhagim? It's a great question. What does that have anything to do with Pesach? Why is this parak over here? So that's going to be answered in just a moment. As we start now, the first Mishnah of the fourth parak of Pesachim. Mishnah begins Makom Shenagu Lasos Malacha Barvei Pesachim Ad Chatzos Osim Makom Shenagu Shelo Lasos Ein Osim. So there's various menhagim about whether or not work can be done on Erev Pesach up until Chatzos, meaning from Chatzos and onward. So as we're going to learn together, so that's not a minhag. That's standard. That's halacha. That one is not allowed to work from Chatzos and onward. But some communities took upon themselves to have a minhag not to work on the morning of Erev Pesach. So some communities took on that minhag, some communities did not take on that minhag. And so what happens now if you're traveling from one community to another? So let's say you're traveling in either direction, either from community that doesn't do malach on the morning of Yadalit to community that does, or vice versa. No sin love chomer makom shiatla misham v'chomer makom shalach l'sham. So what you're going to do is you're always going to be machmir in either direction. Now that needs to be clarified. What does that mean exactly? You're going to be machmir in either direction. So stay tuned because the Gemara is going to explain that a lot better. Then the Mishnah says something which is going to sound a little bit confusing, and that is, do not deviate. Mibnei ha-machlokes. In other words, basically, conform to the community that you're in. In other words, if the community that you're in right now has a particular minug, so you should conform to that minug and not create any kind of machlokes. Kayote bo. And then the Mishnah gives us another example of moving around and minhagim change. So before we get to the next example of the Mishnah, so obviously the Mishnah itself is a little bit confusing. Because in the first half of the Mishnah it says you're always going to take on the chumras. The chumras where you are, where you go to, and the chumras where you come from. How does that conform with the next point of the Mishnah, which is always be a conformist in terms of minhagim? Wherever you are, you should conform to that minhag. Well, if you're going to be straddled with the chumra in which you came from, so then you're not going to be able to be a conformist in. And so the Mishnah is a little bit confusing. So, and the Gemara is going to deal with all that. The Gemara is going to clean up the Mishnah, clean up our understanding of the Mishnah. In terms of this minhag of not working on Erev Pesach, where is it coming from? So Rashi back in the Mishnah. So turn back to the bottom of the previous Amud. Let's take a look together at a really critical Rashi. Rashi writes over here, Shelo lasos kedei shelo yeitarud b'malacha. So what happens if you're working on the morning? We're talking about the morning of the 14th. So you're going to be so tired by malach, you're going to be so busy with work. Yishkach bir chimutzo. So chimutzo. So what you're going to do is you're going to forget about destroying your chametz. All right, destruction of the chametz comes at the end of the morning. Right, the sixth hour. Right, from 11 to 12. So that's the mitzvah bir chametz. And if you're working, so you're going to get lost in your work. You're going to get too distracted, and you're going to forget about bir chametz. Shchitas haPesach v'tikur matzah tzarech halayla. Shechting Karban Pesach and the preparation of the matzah. Now, obviously, Rashi knows full well we're going to have five prakim discussing it, that the shechting the Karban Pesach is done in the afternoon. But you don't just simply walk in and shechting Karban Pesach. That too is going to need preparation as well. The shechting the Karban Pesach is going to need preparation. The matzah, right? Let's say you bake the matzahs in the afternoon. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. That there's what's called matzah shel mitzvah that you bake in the afternoon. Of Erev Pesach, but still, it all needs preparation. You can't just simply walk in there, shech your Karban Pesach, bake your matzahs. It needs hachana, and the hachana is done in the morning. So therefore, as a result of all the hachana that's necessary, so therefore the minhag was in certain communities not to do malacha even on the morning of Erev Pesach. So l'tzorch halayla d'mitzvah l'tzorch mibojam kidei lahasev my hair kedamer beperk basar chotfim matzah b'leil pesachim. So we're going to see at the tail end of our Masechta the idea that once the Seder starts, so let's go. Meaning we should be ready for the Seder the first opportunity we have. We have to wait for the Seder to start until Laila. Meaning we can't start the Seder until nighttime. But once nighttime rolls around, so then there shouldn't be any delay anymore. You should be starting the Seder immediately. We'll see more about that later in the Masechta. Anyway, so the Erev Pesach is a Yom HaVachana. And so because of the Yom HaChana, so therefore, a minhag starts about. There's no Isser in the Torah not to do Malacha on Erev Pesach, but various minhagim sprouted. So again, on the afternoon of Erev Pesach, so there, as we'll discuss in more detail why that should be, there's a Halacha not to do Malacha. We'll explain that better later on why that should be. But in the morning, so minhag sprouted about not to do Malacha, and Rashi just explained why. Back to the Mishnah, another example of minhagim and people moving around. Kayotze bo, similarly, we're on the top of Nun Amud Beis. We'll give another example. Hamalach perishvias mi makam shekalu makam shelo kalu. Let's say you're going around and with perishvias. Now perishvias have kedusha and can only be eaten. The Torah says le'achla, you must eat the perishvias with its kedusha. However, there comes a point in time where once the crop is no longer out in the field. So then, there's a mitzvah of what's called Bi'ur Perishvias. Okay, it's not exactly the same as the mitzvah of Bi'ur Chametz. Well, according to the Rambam, actually it is. But once there's no longer any of this particular fruit in the field. So then you have the mitzvah of what to do. It's called biur. Now, what exactly biur is, the Torah itself never states clearly. Now, it's true that the Rambam says that biur means that you actually have to destroy it. But the Ravids of the position that no, that we don't destroy it, but rather what we do is that we just simply are mafkir it. We declare it to be ownerless. Bizman Azeh, where the mitzvah of Shemitah is only a mitzvah derabbanan, so we fall like the Ravid in Eretz Yisrael. They're just simply mafkir. But anyway, regardless, the point is that not everyone's field is going to deplete itself of this particular fruit at the same time. And so therefore, makum shekalu lamakum shelo kalu, omi makum shelo kalu lamakum shekalu chayev leva'er. So the Mishnah tells us it doesn't matter where you came from, where you go to, as long as in one of those locations there was a conclusion of the of that particular fruit. In other words, the zman beer has hit in either the place you came from or the place you go to. So then you have a mitzvah of doing biur, according to the Rambam, destroying, according to the Ravid, just simply declaring it to be hefker. And Rav Yehuda Martseva Avelecha Af'ata. Rav Yehuda makes a final point in the Mishnah, really difficult to understand what he's talking about, what he's even referring to, certainly what he's trying to say. The Gemara is going to give a pshat. We're going to wait for the Gemara to say a pshat in this final position of Rav Yehuda. We start with the Gemara. My iri arvi psachim afilo arvi shabbosos varvi yamim tovim nami. So the Gemara says, you know, in Erev Pesach, you're not allowed to do work. The Gemara says, really? Why are we limiting the discussion to Erev Pesach? What about Erev Shabbos? What about standard Erev Yontif? We have a braisa. Osem malacha barvi shabbosos v'yamim tovim in amincho lamala. Ein ero simen bracha la'olam. You do malacha on Erev Shabbos, on Erev Yontif, from mincha and onward. Rashi over here says, mincha here means 9.5 hours into the day. So on a perfect day that'd be 2:30 in the afternoon. And if you do that, ain't a rosimun bracha lola, meaning obviously there's no iser malach at that point in time, but still nothing good is going to come out from that. You won't see a simun bracha. So v'hasam in a mincha lamala hu da'aser samach lamincha lo hacha mechatzo. So the Gemara says, okay, but there's still a difference. Meaning when it comes to Erev Shabbos and Erev Yontov, so that's min amincha lamala. Over here, when it comes to Erev Pesach, already from Chatzos and onward, so now there is an iser not to do malach. Inami asam siman brachu d'lo chazei, avashamutu lo mishamtin alei. Also, another way to make a differentiation is that on Erev Shabbos, on Erev Yontov, so it is not recommended. And not only that, with the assurances that you're not going to see a bracha. Over here, to work on Erev Pesach after midday, Shemuti Mishamtin Alei, with the person is put in Cherem. So, Hacha Shemuti Nami Mishamtin Alei. Gufa. Ha'osa Malacha Be'er Vishavos Ve'er Yamtav Min Amincho Lamalo. Uve Motze Yishavos Ve'er Motze Yamtav Ve'er Motze Yom Kippur V'chol Makub She'isham. Nidno Navera La'asui Yitan Tzibur Ein Aro Simen Bracha La'ola. The Gemara over here quotes the Braisa. The Braisa adds to the point of staying away from Malacha, both on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yamtav, like we just described from Minchan onward, and on Motze Shabbos, Motze Yamtav, Motze Yom Kippurim. And any time that there is what's called nidnu navera, a place in time where we should be abstaining from malacha, the Gemara over here gives the example of Tanis Sibur. Tanis Sibur, Rashi points out, based on the Gemara in Tanis, is where there's a scarcity of rain, and the Chachamim instituted public fast days. So where, at a certain point in time, not only do we fast, but we also refrain from doing malacha. So under these circumstances, so there, you should be refraining from malacha, not only on, obviously, the day itself, but even on the bookends, even as Shabbos and Yontif are approaching, or these other days as well, and even upon the exit, on Motzei, also there should be an element of Hosafa, that you should be adding to the Yom Kodesh, and not doing malacha even on the Otsa as well. Tanur Rabbanan, we're going to quickly run through this idea that you should not be doing malacha on Erev Shabbos. Yesh Zariz V'nizkar v'yesh zariz v'nifsad. Yesh shafel v'nizkar v'yesh shafel v'nifsad. So here in the Braisa, four categories that are going over. You could be you could be someone who is who's a worker. You're a schwitzer and you're going to get rewarded. You could be a worker. You're gonna lose out. You can be lazy, get rewarded. You can be lazy, and you're going to lose out. How do we have these four categories? The Gemara goes on to describe Zarz v'Nisgar Davi Kuli Shabbasa V'Lo Avid V'Mali Shabbasa. So you're a Schwitzer, you're a worker. You work every day of the week, but Erev Shabbos, you stop working, right? Like what we described. Meaning not the entirety of Erev Shabbos, but again, this idea that min amincha lamala, so you should cease and desist from doing work. In other words, and really focus on Shabbos. Zarz v'nifsa, da'avi kuli Shabbasa, v'avid b'malei Shabbasa. Now, you could be a worker and lose out, and that is that you could work up to and through Erev Shabbos as well. Meaning, like what we just described moments earlier, that there's no siman bracha for working late in the afternoon on a Friday afternoon. Shafa v'nisgar de lo avi kuli Shabbasa v'lo avi b'malei Shabbasa. How could you be lazy and get rewarded? Basically, you don't work, and you also don't work on Erev Shabbos as well. Now, it is funny because such an individual that just simply, that's his habit. His habit is that he's not a worker, so he's going to get rewarded for not working on Erev Shabbos. So the answer is yes. More of that to be described in just a moment. Shafa v'nifsa de lo avi kuli Shabbasa v'avi b'malei Shabbasa. Now, the lazy worker who is not going to get rewarded, and that is that he decides that, look, he'll work one day a week. Of that one day of the week that he chooses to work, he chooses of all days, Friday afternoon, he chooses to work. Rabbi says, look, the women of Mechuza, right, the town of Mechuza were very wealthy people. The Gemara reports that to us on numerous occasions. And Rava says the women there don't work. They're so wealthy they don't work. Nevertheless, they don't work on Erev Shabbos. They're going to get rewarded. So Rava says, the price that we just learned together. So Rava says, I'm going to take that price. I'm going to apply it right over here. These are the women who are not working on Erev Shabbos. Now, the truth of the matter is, they're not working year-round, but they're not working on Erev Shabbos, and they're going to get rewarded. Rava, Rami Ksiv, Ki Gadol Ad Shamayim Chazdecha, Ksiv Ki Gadol Me'al Shamayim Chazdecha. Psukim and Tehillim talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Gadol Ad Shamayim, and then the second pasuk is Me'al Shamayim. HaKetzah Kam Ba'osin L'Shma, Kam Ba'osin Shalol L'Shma. So the Gemara says, look, the discrepancy over here can be explained for those people who are doing mitzvahs L'Shma, and even those who are doing a Shalol L'Shma. Uchud Rav Yehuda, Dam Rav Yehuda, Amarav, Olam, Yasok Adam B'Torah V'mitzvahs Af, Api Shalol L'Shma. Even if you're doing a shalol lishma, but still, shemitok shalol lishma balashma. Even doing shalol lishma leads to lishma. So the so if you're doing it me'al shamayim, so that is that's the person that's doing a lishma. But the ad lishamayim, that's the shalol lishma. But that's fine. In other words, but you're still doing a mitzvah. And over here the b'nei mechuzah, the neshei mechuzah, they're not working. And erev Shabbos, yeah, they're not working the rest of the week as well. But still. Even though shalol lishma, but still, there's a value shalol lishma. The shalol lishma leads to lishma. Good. We're going to pause over here, and tomorrow we're going to pick it up at the two dots, Tan Rabbanan, the last short line on the Amud. Okay, let's quickly recap our daf today. The first thing we tackled was the discrepancy between the sheets of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda here, the shear of Chazara for Rabbi Meir. In our Mishnah going back to Mem Tesamad Aleph, so the Shir Chazar for Amir is a Kabeit, so the Shir for Chazar for Rabbi Yehuda is a Kazayis, the exact opposite, as we saw in that first Mishnah in the 7th Perek of Brachos. So two ways to deal with it. Rabbi Yochanan says, Mukhlefes HaShita, flip around the Shitas, and Abai says, no, keep everything as it is, the way we have it. And it's just a question of what is going to be the Makor Halacha. So over here, when it comes to Chazara, it's a rabbinic enactment, and what is the threshold of that rabbinic enactment? Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue over here. As far as benching is concerned, that's based on the drasha and how to darshan that pasuk. It's a different issue. And then for the rest of the Amud Aleph, the rest of the perek, so three psukim and Zechariah captured the Gemara's attention, and we darshan three psukim and Zechariah. What its connection is to our discussion doesn't seem like a very tight connection. Has to do with the annexation of Yerushalayim. One day Yerushalayim is going to be huge. Okay. Anyway, so but that is the end of the third parak of Psachim. We started at the fourth parak of Psachim, gave a brief introduction to Minhagim, and obviously a parak dedicated to Minhagim. First Minhag, which is the reason why this parak finds itself here in Masechta Psachim, is the minhag not to do malacha on the morning of Erev Pesach. Some communities adopted such a minhag, some communities did not. What happens when you travel? So our Mishnah is a little bit unclear. The Mishnah says you're always a machmir, regardless of where you head to or where you come from. And then the Mishnah says, and always make sure that when it comes to minhagim, to conform to the place that you're in. Okay, which one should we do? So stay tuned, because the Gemara later on is going to address that very question in terms of how to understand our Mishnah. And the Mishnah gives another example of minhagim in terms of bi or peiro shvius, where there, regardless of where you come from, where you go to, you always take on the chumrah of either the place where you came from or where you go to. If either places you have experienced is man bi'ur, so then you have a mitzvah to do bi'ur. What bi'ur is as far as shvius is concerned? So quickly we touched on the machlokes between the Rambam and the Ravid. Rambam says bi'ur means you actually have to destroy the peir shvius, and according to the Rambam you destroy, and according to the Ravid you just simply are mafkir it. You declare it to be ownerless. A number of discussions to be had in the Gemara. One is, what's the difference between Erev Pesach and Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov? Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov, there also is an idea that you have to cease and desist from doing malacha, but the Gemara says, yeah, but the idea of stopping malacha on Erev Pesach is a more intense idea, both in terms of the amount of time that it incorporates, right? In other words, in terms of the halacha of stopping doing malacha on Erev Pesach, already from Chatzos is a halacha that you have to stop. On Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov, so it's not from Chatzos, but min HaMincha Lamala. And on top of that, also the severity, where if you do work after Mincha and onward on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov, so there you're not going to see a Siman Bracha. You do so on Erev Pesach, so such an individual is Punta Chayre. So those are the differences between the Issur Malacha of Erev Pesach, the Issur Malacha on Erev Shabbos, Erev Yontov. And then finally, the Gemara talked about the Siman Bracha that one gets if one does, in fact, avoid doing Malacha on Erev Shabbos. And even if it's Shalal Lishma, the Gemara over here in Pesachim Daf Nun tells us that there's a value of Shalal Lishma, Mitoch Shalal Lishma, Balishma. Adkan.